can kind of change gears by looking at WASP, and also Pete and I kind of took the approach here of kind of an overview of where we've been in WASP pheromone research and maybe where we're going, and kind of make it more of a review and hopefully challenge some of you to get involved with WASP, yellow jacket, paper WASP research in the pheromones, because really we're at the infancy stage. We're kind of taking little baby steps for the rest of you are handling the neurogenomics of pheromone response, and we're just trying to figure out where these pheromones are. Vespids are full of exocrine glands. They're throughout the body. We had good documentation by Landolt and Bob Jean and some of his co-workers. We know something, obviously, about the venom gland and its function, and a little maybe in the sternal gland you see in the, I don't have a pointer, but down, down here. Sternal glands, it's pretty sensitive. Okay, I'm not going to use it there. Sternal glands a little, and the mandibular glands here may be involved in mating behavior with the males. Well, what we did in 1998, Pete Landolt, Bob Jean, and I wrote a review paper, so I thought it would be good to see, okay, where were we were at in 1998, where we've been 10 years from then, today, and where could we go in the future. And here's what we documented in 1998, that it's pretty well documented that the venom is a source of alarm pheromone for an array of vespines, yellow jackets, Philistes. But we've been documenting the actual chemical identification has only been done for those in the yellow jackets, the acetamide, and Vespa crabro. In fact, up to this point, 98, we really only had four pheromones chemically identified, rigorous bioassay as well as chemical identification. And the question marks are there for you to fill in, okay? That means we don't know. We have hypotheses and ideas, but this is your opportunity to be involved. There's also sex pheromones, some that are long range, some that are copulatory stimulants, and maybe possibly again from the venom. Continue on, there's also pheromones been documented in the Vespa orientalis as building pheromones, stimulating nest building, building the carton. Again, what's the source, what's the structure, they showed some activity, again with a bioassay. A footprint pheromone, Vespula vulgaris, supposedly they lay something down at the nest entrance as well as the tunnel to the actual underground nest. Again, what's the source? What's the structure? We really don't know. The queen pheromones, I think this would be a really interesting area, a challenging area, and we could get a lot done, I think, with queen pheromone research. We really don't know. Ishii and co-workers in the late 60s, early 70s worked with Vespa orientalis and documented a queen pheromone. But again, didn't really link it to a glandular source. Also came up with a brooding pheromone that made the hornets hug the pupae, I guess, and warm them. And a similar thing with Vespula media. But again, we don't have the source. We're not even sure what exocrine glands involved, and we don't have identification of some of these. So really just four. So since that time, in 98, I tried to peruse the literature, and we really have only have two more WASP pheromones chemically identified, primarily from the work of Dr. Ono in Japan. He's worked with the giant hornet Vespa mandarinia and has documented alarm pheromone in the venom with 2-pentanol and two other compounds in the venom that work as synergists. Squamosa, Pete and I worked on some sources in the head extract that elicited defense response, but again, we need that chemist working with us, Bob Vandermeer. To isolate and identify that structure. Alarm pheromones in Dominulus, a possible defensive function from an ectomandibular gland in Dominulus. And again, more work has been done on Philistes, both in this country and in Italy, on a venom pheromone and alarm pheromones in the venom, that is. But again, a lot of volatile compounds, as I'll document here in a moment, have been identified, but again, the actual alarm pheromone or group of compounds that function as alarm pheromone have not been identified. I'm going to show you, interesting, Vespa mandarinia has marks their honeybee foraging site with a pheromone. It's been speculated Vespula germanica at protein foraging sites has a head attractant pheromone that brings in conspecifics. And you see some of the other female sex attractant in crab row. There's been more work done on a nest trail marking, where they actually apparently are marking the nest entrance to the underground colony there. And again, they generally say cuticular hydrocarbons, but as we know, it's kind of a catch-all of terms, that what could be there. I'm not going to deal with cuticular hydrocarbons. We've heard a lot about that today, but I'm primarily going to talk about some of the other types of pheromones here. I wanted to highlight Dr. Ono's work because it's really good. I like what Bob said about having a bioassay-driven isolation identification for pheromones. And I think he's got a good system where there's a good bioassay, there's behavior that's associated with the alarm, and he had good chemists involved here. So he just has a filter paper in front of a nest entrance. They rush in, it's aggregation as well as attack. And you can look at the number of hornets rushing along the sample, and venom is number two. 2-pentanol was the first compound he isolated, which had some good reaction, but when he added the other two compounds in the venom, he got almost an equal statistically insignificant difference from the venom at this point. And then in the same interesting phenomenon with the giant hornet is you can see in this upper left, I'm afraid to use the mouse here, here we go. He's actually documents a very excellent marking behavior. They rub the gastral sterna along the honeybee hive as they get ready to come into attack. Usually a scout worker finds this. They have their Van der Beek gland there. They've isolated a compound that attracts other hornets in that come in and decimate primarily the European honeybees very quickly. Those of you that like YouTube, go to the YouTube, and there's a number of good videos there, Wild Chronicles from National Geographic. And he actually sent me a nice video as well of this behavior. And again, I love to see a behavior linked with the pheromonal response or the pheromonal activity. There's also postulated here with Vespula germanica that they mark protein foraging sites. We know Germanica is an invasive species around the world, can very quickly come in to a protein site in very large numbers. And the group in Argentina, Diadamo, found that when they put out cat food, which is not just good for cats, good for yellow jackets, plus the squashed heads of Vespula germanica, they got a more significant number of responses and visits there, suggesting there's something in that head that's bringing in the germanica. But we don't see this obvious marking behavior that we saw in the giant hornet. This is a group, Steinmetz, and his work with the nest trail marking pheromones, again, at the nest entrance as well as a tunnel that's going to the underground nest in Vespine colonies. And what I'd like to do now is just kind of walk through some of the research opportunities. What are some things that you can do? There's a lot of easy opportunities if you like working with yellow jackets, and there's some difficult things. And I think there's a number of easy ones that I think you'd be interested in working with. There are documentation of sex-attracted pheromones. And I think if we use a wide tube olfactometers, a wind tunnel, Pete and I have used a wind tunnel with Vespula squamosa and found that males will fly upwind in an oriented fashion to virgin females. So I think we have the bioassays, we have the opportunities for identifying sex-attractant pheromones, or at least documenting its occurrence, and then hopefully working with the chemist to identify it. One phenomenon that's quite interesting that we worked with for a number of years is the swarming of paper wasp sexuals, usually at elevated sites such as the NASA space shuttle. Fire towers on top of the University of Florida football stadium, all sorts of places, collecting nests, collecting individuals with a hard hat. Seemed kind of ridiculous, but they've made us put hard hats on. But you see at this place not only hundreds, sometimes thousands of wasps of several species oftentimes together. You'll see male patrolling, you'll see scent marking by the males as well, and eventually you see females that will be coming in large numbers and forming an aggregation. And you do see copulatory attempts and mating, although infrequent initially. So I think it's a really interesting system, and we have hypothesized, put together a model, if you will, of possible pheromonal communication for this system, because a lot of things are going on here. Initially, we think that the males come in, the mate Maybe they're coming in because it is a hilltopping behavior, elevated site. So they're come into these areas and they scent mark, rubbing their mandibles, rubbing their gastral sterna, and scent marking their territories, presumably to attract females to come in here. Females do come in. As females gather, do they release pheromones that, you know, attract further females and thus increasing the number of individuals are there? As the females come in, is there a feedback where it attracts more males coming in? And in the presence of females, does that elicit scent marking behavior in the males? And in more males, does that elicit more scent marking behavior or more males to be coming in? So there's a number of possible pathways here, and hopefully this could give us a number of hypotheses to test in, you know, either bioassay of some sort, either wind tunnel, Y-tube, or even an arena bioassay. So we do know that this scent marking behavior is correlated with these glands, the seventh sternal glands you see above, and a very enlarged mandibular glands, and a number of these Polistes males. So we have the glands, we have the behavior, just need the bioassay, we need some isolation identification of the compounds. What we tried to do with a species, unfortunately, is not involved in the swarms, but it does show some scent marking and territorialities, Polistes exclamens, and we used these, tested them in a wind tunnel system, and indeed we found that the males produced a female attractant, that females would fly upwind in oriented fashion, chemonemotaxis, to mandibular glands, seven sternal glands, and the head extract. We didn't always get them to land because I think that we need the visual image there, part of the bioassay. So then we did the flip side. Well, what about males coming into females, or females producing attractant to bring in the males? So Polistes male attractant. And indeed, we found positive, significant results in the chemonemotaxis of males coming into the female thorax, into the whole body. And we're not quite sure what glands are involved. But a lot of times, exocrine glands, as you know, released out, and it can be covered out through the whole exoskeleton of the insect there. So we have some evidence for attraction from to males to females and females to males. Recently, a graduate student of Pete's at Washington State, John McKenzie, worked on Polistes dominulus and was working on sex-attractant pheromones in a Y-tube olfactometry assay as well as a arena bioassay. And I'm just going to summarize some of his results, but he was trying to test some of these hypotheses we had in this model. And this is in a Y-tube olfactometer. So the blue is the treatment. So, for example, the second one is a female going to a male extract, or is it going to a control? In this case, the females are significantly choosing the male odor over the control. And then the opposite of males to females, which are indicated in wind tunnel experiments with a different species. In fact, males were, you know, picking the control significantly more than the female odor there. And then the male to male and female to female were not significantly different at all. Again, this was a choice test and a walking bioassay, which we have to have guarded conclusions from as well, since they fly most of the time. Then John continued to do arena bioassays and exposed, in this case, male Polistes dominulus to male and female virgin body segments, and noted a whole list of behaviors. And the ones that, of course, that are interesting to us are the scent marking behaviors, the mandibular rub and gastral dragging. And he found there was a significant response to the female thorax, both mandibular rub and gastral drag in response to the female thorax, a female gaster, and even the presence of the male thorax and male gaster. So there's some indication that scent marking was being elicited by both male and female scents or pheromones here. He did the same thing with virgin female Polistes dominulus and looked at, again, a host of behaviors and how they would respond to both female and male tagmata here. And I just put all the zeros on here, so there was no significant antenation, grooming, gastral rubbing, mandibular rubbing, or any other obvious behavior. And so there was not any indication here of the female responding to the other female odor or the male odor. And then took this a step further is, okay, let's look at not just the body segments, but let's link it with these glands. So John looked at the venom glands, the DeForest gland, male mandibular glands and legs. They have tegmental glands, and they have leg glands, also turlotsine. Others have documented that, and sternal glands. And again, we didn't get anything to the venom or the DeForest gland, but there was significant mandibular rubbing, gastral dragging, presumed scent marking, to female legs, male mandible, male legs, and the male sternite there. So, same experiment with the females. What's going on with the females? Checking, again, a host of behaviors, and nothing. There was really no significant behavioral responses to these same glands and gland extracts here. So, if we relate these experiments back to our hypothetical model, and I emphasize hypothetical model, and so you can certainly change this, and but I think it's a model for us to continue to generate some tests. If we look at the point of positive is overall positive data, okay, male scent marking attracting females. Well, we do know from the wind tunnel experiment and from the arena bioassays and even the Y-tube olfactometer that there's some good indication here of females being attracted to the male scent marking. The next one where female pheromones, females releasing a pheromone that attracts the males, that pathway, we had some indication in the wind tunnel, but we didn't have indication in the Y-tube. In fact, they were choosing the control more. So it's kind of a mixed bag there. We had both positive and negative evidence there. What about females to females? You think of an aggregation pheromone possibility that females are coming in overwintering, maybe increasing their chances of mating, I'm not sure. And there's also some heterospecific aggregations. There was really no indication in the Y-tube olfactometer experiment for that type of female-female attraction. What about male-male attraction over here? Again, there was no evidence that males were attracting, you know, other males. And lastly, females' pheromones eliciting some male scent marking behavior, eliciting maybe more release of scent marking pheromones. There was some indication of female tagmata eliciting that response in the males. And then what was also interesting, if it is a territorial function, males were also, presence of males' tagmata, male glands were stimulating more male scent marking in other males. So this is just the beginning, but there's a lot of different things that you could be testing to look at this swarming of sexuals where you have both males and females, and there's a lot of different things going on. Another area I think could be fruitful work is alarm pheromones. Pete and I have worked on Vespula squamosa, the southern yellow jacket, and he and his colleagues have documented that in the venom there's an acetamide that is a very powerful attractant and alarm pheromone. If they come in, and that's yellow jacket stuck to the sticky ball there. And what we do need to remember with alarm pheromones, I think, is what particular behavior are we actually trying to show and demonstrate? Because alarm is a very general catch-on term. I mean, if we think it in the broadest sense, it could be just get out of there. That's an alarm response. Let's disperse. It could be attraction. Come in. There's an intruder. We're going to be attracted to that. It can be rapid movement and flight can be involved. All these behaviors can then, once a target is found, maybe it's a visual cue is aiding this. There's an arrestant component there. Hovering, landing, all these behaviors. And, you know, what we look for is they're biting and stinging. That's the defensive response to an intruder. But all of these might be involved in alarm response, and different compounds may be involved, or compounds at different dosages may be involved in any one of these particular behaviors. There's synergism may be involved in the context. Whether we're dealing with a solitary situation, the individual out of foraging site, or an individual within the colony, there's the context may be important as well. Oh, and then even scent marking the intruder. Why not mark that intruder so as he or she tries to come back, I remember that I've marked him. We did demonstrate that not just in the venom, but in the head, there is something there in the head of Vespula squamosa that elicits defensive response and actual stings and attacks to the black sphere. You often need a target to focus the attack in the yellow jackets. One good culprit here is the mandibular gland. Again, we don't have the chemical nature of this gland is really not known. One very interesting thing was that there was often a long-term, I hate to say this, is Pete out there, he's going to correct me, but we're not supposed to follow our noses, I guess, in chemical ecology, although I heard Murray Blum last year in Washington, D.C. said he followed his nose a lot. So Pete's out there, he's going to get a hold of me in there. But there was a distinct butterscotch odor that stayed with Vespula squamosa for a long period of time after attack. So we hypothesize that maybe they're marking an intruder that may come and go as they're trying to take over a nest. Could this be some type of long-term type of alarm pheromone? And indeed, we found after 15 hours, these corks would still elicit some type of defensive response in Vespula squamosa. So there was something that was long-term that was being placed on these attack corks that they would often bite as well as and sting. There's more work that's been done on Polistes. This is the work Terlotsi and Bob Gene, his co-workers, have done things. And what I really like is that they've been carefully designed lab and field bioassays, taking into account, trying to tease out the chemical component, because they're visually oriented organisms. They fly rapidly, and they're trying to, you got to take in the visual, the target, in there. So they've very well designed some of these to demonstrate alarm pheromone presence, but most of them link back into the venom. The venom sac you see in the upper right there, and have long list of venom volatiles, but again, these are the candidates, and the next step is to try to come down to what exactly are the actual alarm pheromone or pheromones that elicit this response in a number of Polistes. One very interesting area is yellow jackets feeding on a different variety of feeding sources. Okay, I got 2 minutes. They feed on live prey. Many of them are scavengers feeding on protein. They may come to carbohydrate sources, and many of them just choose everything on your picnic lunch there. What is interesting is that the Diadamo group in Argentina have documented that there's something in the wasp odor, particularly in the head, that seems to draw in more Germanica, that it actually enhances a response to the meat bait. And they've further isolated and suggested that this is a foraging site attractant, where they've actually found it in the head. So this is the head response, number of landings there, the head versus the controls there. And then they also tested it at the nest entrance, and they didn't find any hitting the target, stinging, biting. They did find significant landings and hovers, but they said this was probably not alarm pheromone. But I would like to go back to what I said about alarm attractant component may be a part of the alarm response. But Bob Gene and his co-workers looked at the same species and looked at carbohydrate sources, and whoa, they didn't find any evidence for scent marking. So is it possible we have a difference in behavior, whether it's a carbohydrate source or a protein source? And then a Korean research group also looked at a carbohydrate source and found no odor involvement there. Quickly, other research opportunities, social parasites in the usurpation process of vespines have a very enlarged Dufour's gland. So squamosa, artica, and austriaca, two good candidates to work on social parasitism. And of course, queen control. Sure would like to know what's going on in the yellow jacket colonies, because they can get pretty big, some of the perennial colonies, as you see on the right. We do know that there's something the queen leaves behind on the nest comb that does inhibit ovarian development. So another area of fruitful research. So again, as you can tell, we are at the embryonic stages in our research compared to the honeybee, termite, imported fire ant research. A lot of opportunities. I would like to echo what Bob said, Slusser said in his paper, that we really need to have chemists coming together with behaviorists and developing very good bioassays, testing specific behavioral response, isolating the glandular source, identifying the compounds, and at relevant doses, and develop, I think the next step is there's going to be some more laboratory and field bioassays that can be very relevant for yellow jackets and help us isolate these. So if I had to gamble and say, what are some of the future trends? I'll end with this. I'm gambling completely. I think the foraging, next 10 years maybe, the foraging site activity of pheromones will continue. I didn't talk about nest mate recognition pheromones, but I think that's going to be an area you've already heard a lot about. I think alarm pheromones and vespids. I think somebody's going to tackle queen control and colony control in vespids. And again, as we heard from the last speaker, there's a lot of opportunity, and I think we'll see molecular biology combining with pheromonal biology, and that'll be the next step there. So thank you, Bob and Colin, for having me, and I'm done.